Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, September 22nd. I'm Ray Graff. Joining us once again to answer your automotive questions, Gordon Fricke, owner and operator of Barber and Fricke Automotive in Hoosick Falls, New York. We welcome your car calls right now. Maybe there's a little ping, something's rattling. This is the guy who will be able to talk you through it and to talk you off the metaphorical ledge. 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. It's always a popular show when Gordon's on, so I recommend you get in early. You can also email the program, voxpop@wamc.org. But the easiest way is to call 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke is here, boys and girls. We'll start the show after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We talk automotive maintenance and repair every month or so. And we always welcome back our friend Gordon Fricke. Gordon is the owner and operator of Barber and Fricke Automotive Incorporated, an independent repair, auto body, towing, and used car facility in lovely Hoosick Falls, New York. Gordon has been in the automotive repair and service game for over 30 years, and he knows his stuff. If you want to call, I recommend you do it now. 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. You can also email the program, voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org. If we get a lot of emails, I'll do the best I can. Sometimes we, you know, just like the calls. If you're at the end of the line and the show's over, the show's over. But we'll do the best we can to get every question in. Gordon Fricke, welcome back.
Thanks, Ray. Good to be back.
You know, back before the world ended, this would be considered a perfect driving day. The sky is blue. It's warm, but not too warm.
No humidity.
And so we took a ride in your Buick, your 65 Riviera.
Yes.
Pat Cooney, our VP of operations, and you and me. And what a ride.
Well, you've asked me to bring it for about the last, 4 or 5 months.
And I'm looking
for the right day, and today was the right day.
It's something.
So that tire squealing, by the way, I did not do that intentionally.
What power? What torque in that engine?
Enormous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what, 6-7 miles a gallon?
They claimed they were around 13 or so if they were driven sanely. And down into single digits if you want power.
Okay, well, you drove it fairly sanely, I think.
Yeah, it wasn't bad. No. We ran, you know, from light to light pretty quickly, but...
But the interior is fantastic. And so you've rehabbed this vehicle. Like, you drove it here a year ago, maybe, and it was still beautiful in my eyes then. A
couple of years ago, and it was pretty raw. It was drivable, but pretty rough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so you've redone the interior, and it's not exactly the same upholstery,
no,
but
it is. It is. I wanted to match the seat upholstery to the original pattern, and I searched for it to get it correct with the right buttons in the middle of the seat, and it looks correct.
Oh,
it looks good.
It looks, it's amazing. I sat, it's a two-door, and so if you haven't seen a Buick Riviera from that era or any of the two-door cars from that era, they're huge. And so Pat Cooney sat in the front seat, I sat in the back, and there was enough room. You know, I'm a big guy.
Is that
it was
why
not
were,
a problem.
Is that why you were yelling to us? Because there was so much distance between us?
Yeah. Yes. Well, I like to yell. Yeah. The windows are down. You know how it is. Well, that was fabulous. And if you want to see it, I took a picture the last time Gordon brought the vehicle. It's on our website, wamc.org/voxpop. And today's show, there's a picture of Gordon's 65 Riviera. All right. Before we get to the calls at 800-348-2551, we'll do one from email. And this is from D in Cornwall on Hudson. Says, I drive a 2005 Mini Cooper 5-speed, 110,000 miles on her. And I'll get to that thing about her in a moment.
Okay.
Two questions. One, what should they do when I take her in for service? Any special age-related things they should check? Two, do you recommend any preventative actions I could take, like giving her a dose of Tecron, et cetera?
Yeah, well, he must listen to our show.
I have a feeling.
Or is it he or she? He.
I don't know. I know the car's a she, but
that's... Well, okay, yeah. Well, so, yeah, giving the car a dose of Tecron is very good, all cars. It sounds like the vehicle is being maintained pretty adequately by the sounds of the email. And what was the mileage rate? 105?
110.
110, okay. Well, that car does not have a timing belt, which is a critical service if your car has a timing belt. That's a chain vehicle.
Yeah.
oil changes, of course, we talk about all the time on the show, and we get lots of calls about the type of oil, when to change it, what to use, synthetic versus non. That car definitely, as most, a lot of cars today are synthetic oil, and I would keep changing that oil more regularly than the book might say or the dealer might say.
Yeah.
That car, if it hasn't yet, I'm sure it's ready for spark plugs, air filter, the usual stuff.
Yeah, now you're a car guy, right?
Kind of.
So, do you call your cars she?
No.
You call it, right?
No, I don't name my cars or refer to them as male or female, but I know some people give their cars names.
Like boats, you call she, right? For some odd reason?
Yes, all right. The USS Enterprise, Scotty always called that a she, didn't
he?
Yeah.
I think it's an it, right?
Yeah, well, I guess.
Okay. Well, they do have personalities, though.
But I do have a Volkswagen bus that a good friend of ours did name, and she called the bus Hans.
Hans?
Which is kind of appropriate. It's a Volkswagen bus out of the 70s,
sure.
Right?
Oh, yeah. I missed those.
Yeah.
Let's go to Ellen in Catskill. Ellen, you're first.
Hello. I have a general question.
Okay.
I have a mechanic who's a distance away, and I want to get my oil changed. I'm the light. Engine check engine light is flashing. If I go locally to get the oil changed, are they obligated to do something about that flashing light?
No, they're not obligated. You certainly could ask them to look into it. The check engine light flashing is not an indication that you're in need of an oil change. That check engine.
No. I wanted to get a change because it's due for it.
Yes.
When it flashes, that's worse, though, right?
Well, yeah. When the check engine light flashes, that means the onboard computer is detecting an engine misfire. So the car more than likely is not performing properly. And you may notice it by a little bit of skipping or sputtering or hesitation. Are you noticing any of that?
No, not at all.
So, yeah.
And the mechanic I would like to go to is a distance away.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to get it changed locally and then go to him.
Sure, yeah.
Well, they might be able to read the codes there, right?
Yeah, I mean, they're not obligated to at all. You could certainly say, I know my check engine light is on or it's flashing, and if you could just change the oil, I'll tend to that at another time. And they'll say, sure, fine,
that's
no problem.
Yeah. Yes, that's what I want to do.
Yeah.
All right, thank you so much.
Okay, thank you very much. I guess the only time that wouldn't apply is if you were getting it inspected you're getting an oil change.
If you were bringing it in for a state inspection, that would be failure.
Right.
Yeah.
And you have a certain number of days in New York anyway to fix that, right?
Not really.
No?
No. If your sticker is still valid,
right,
you've got to the end of that sticker. But if you make a mistake and go in and your sticker is already expired, you don't have any extension.
No,
light on.
Right, and I get that. But I thought you did not have to pay for another inspection if it's within a certain number of days.
Oh, to get it re-inspected?
But I might be wrong about that.
If you get your car inspected today and it fails for some reason, within 30 days, there's a re-inspection fee, which is at a lesser charge.
Okay. Still, I mean, back in the old days, what was it, $6 to get your car
inspected?
Yeah,
I think it was.
Now, emissions test, they tack that on. What does it cost now?
It's actually only $21.
That's an outrage. All right, Gordon, let's go to Joanne in Albany. Joanne, you're on.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Thank you for being here.
So my question, I have a new Hyundai Sonata. I have it because my trusted Toyota was T-boned and destroyed by somebody who went through a red light. So now I have this new 2016 Sonata, which I like a lot, but it has a disturbing problem for me anyway. The front windshield has a fair amount of reflection from the dashboard in the daylight, and it's quite distracting to me when I'm driving. I actually went out and bought a pair of polarized sunglasses, which I have to wear, but I'm wondering if there's something, some kind of coating that can be put on the windshield, if this is a common problem with new cars, what can I do about
it? That's really an interesting one.
Well, what you're seeing is the reflection, because the dashboard is brand new and relatively shiny. If you get your car detailed, for example, and they put products on the dash and the seats, it brings out a tremendous shine, but it also is reflective and glare. What you could experiment with is you could take a towel and put a towel over the dashboard that doesn't obstruct the gauges or the steering wheel or anything important, and just see if the glare is gone. And if that's the case, then it is because your dashboard is too shiny.
Oh, interesting.
How to dull it down, I don't know.
Time will do that, though, right?
Yes, sun and time, but it could take 10 years.
Interesting. Now, can you just turn... Now, you say it's the lights from the display in the car itself?
No. It's driving in sunlight conditions.
Yeah.
And it's the top of the dashboard reflects onto the front windshield. So I see this picture, basically, in front of me as I'm driving.
Try this, too. Do you sit relatively low in the car? Are you a short person?
I'm short, and I have the seat raised up as high as it'll go.
I was going to recommend just experiment and sit higher, and I think you're going to find that puts your vision out of the glare.
Interesting.
But if you've got the seat up all the way, you may be able to get like a booster, you know, some kind of a cushion, and just get your head higher and experiment with that. I bet you that's what it is.
Otherwise, something that would dampen the towel will go flying when you stop.
Problem. Yeah, I was just asking her to do that as an experiment to see if it totally stops the glare, which it probably will.
Well, that's an interesting one.
And try to sit higher, just see if that does anything.
Okay. There's no product that you know of that I could then clean or do something, wipe down the dashboard in some way to reduce
the glare? You could talk to an auto detailing shop, and maybe they could help you. And maybe when you bought the car, they detailed it and put some product on the dash that might be safely calmed down with a cleaner. You know, maybe it's too shiny.
Funny, you know. I got to ask Shartok, because in the old days when he did TV, one of the anchors had a bald head, and they used to spray his head down with something. Was it cornstarch or something?
to keep the shine away?
Yeah, exactly. And Alan would remember this. But I don't recommend you spray your dash with cornstarch, but I could see that being a problem.
Yeah, interesting.
Well, thank you so much.
Thanks, Joanne.
I appreciate the help.
We appreciate the call. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke is our guest, and we'll be right back.
Support comes from Rhinebeck Artist Shops, professional picture framing and fine art materials, Rhinebeck, New Paltz, and now at 793 Broadway in Kingston. RhinebeckArt.com. Temple Sinai, Saratoga Springs, New York, an open congregation welcoming the Jewish community and visitors for Shabbat, holiday services, their religious school, cultural programs, and more. SaratogaSinai.org. The Lathrop Communities, serving older adults in the Quaker tradition for over 25 years, independent living in Northampton and East Hampton, Massachusetts, in the heart of the Pioneer Valley. Lathrop.Kendall.org. The Waldorf School of Saratoga Springs, giving children the education and tools for the challenges of an ever-changing world. WaldorfSaratoga.org. And Union College Concert Series, opening its 2016-2017 season with the Brentano String Quartet, performing works of Haydn and Mendelssohn for its annual fall benefit, Saturday, October 1st, 5 p.m. UnionCollegeConcerts.org.
Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here. It's our automotive show for the month of September, which is flying by. And Gordon Fricke, always our guest on these particular occasions. Pretty soon it'll be ready to winterize vehicles.
Oh, boy, yeah. I mean, today's beautiful. It's like summer, but you're right.
Great.
You're right.
And the looks we got driving around Albany in the 65 Riviera, pretty priceless.
People take notice, and they don't have to even know what the car is. It's just old, it's got a strange shape, and it's, you know, different, and they take notice.
It looks like a car. Everyone goes, oh, that's what a car used to look like.
Back in the Smithsonian days.
Back before the world ended. All right, back to the calls we go. 800-348-2551. Mike in Albany. Mike, you're on.
Hey, gentlemen. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
unlike the lady that just called, I'm a little vertically challenged, and I have a 08 Chevy Silverado. And when I slide into my truck over the past 8 years, I've wore out the side of the seat. It has fallen apart and several other issues with it. The lever doesn't work anymore. What are my options for getting a replacement seat? And do most mechanics and most shops replace them? Because I'm an electrician, but I wouldn't take on DC in a truck.
Interesting.
So it's a power seat?
It's not.
It's not. Okay. What is it for a vehicle? A Chevy Silverado pickup?
Chevy. Yes, it is.
Yeah. What year is the truck?
08.
08. There's a very high likelihood that you could find a really good seat at a salvage yard, a used seat that was in good shape, and that would be the thing to do. If you were lucky, you might be able to get the same exact match interior. If it's a work truck and you're not that concerned about the color of the seat. But yeah, as far as getting it reupholstered and getting everything fixed, it could be expensive to buy the factory seat covers. I'm sure they exist, or I would think they would, and you could talk to an upholstery shop, but used seats are definitely an option. We've replaced them at different times for people.
So is there a database that you can go online and search a number of junkyards at once?
If you go online and just search what you're looking for, used, you know, Chevy Silverado seat 08 or whatever, you'll get a bunch of places that will direct you, and there'll be salvage yards. And I think there are some central search locations where the salvage yards put in their inventory,
yeah,
and you can go through it and sift through it.
Now, once you get that, how difficult is it to remove the old one and put the new one in?
Not bad on a pickup truck, pretty out in the open. It bolts to the floor, and if it's non-power, and if there's no airbags in the seats, which I don't think there are, it's not any issue.
Not in 08, yeah.
Yeah, there's no issue with you know, airbags and stuff like that. Not a bad job to do. So I think that'd get you out of it.
Yeah, and I live in Bennington, and I work in Albany, so there are a few aftermarket places I could go to.
Yeah, I mean,
I did look it up online, and I think they're reasonable to purchase. I just didn't know if most of the places will replace them, and they're reputable. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah, yeah.
No, I don't like to do the plug-in thing with on a truck. DC, AC, I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. No, no.
But it's not a power seat, so where's the power? I mean, what do you need as far as a?
Yeah, if it's a non-power.
You know, well, just the your seat belt's not attached, and that type of stuff.
Oh,
that comes
I see.
Your seat.
Yeah.
So not a bad job.
No, that's not a bad job at all.
Mike, thanks a lot for the call. 800-348-2551 is the number on Vox Pop. And Frank in Stone Ridge is next. Frank, you're on.
Yeah, I have a 2010 Subaru Forester with 106,000 miles, and I'm scheduled to have a timing belt put in. My question is, should I also replace the water pump?
Yes. Short answer is yes, and the reason why is the timing belt drives the water pump, and it also rolls over some other pulleys underneath the plastic covers on the front of the engine. So the way we do it, and most shops I think do nowadays, you can buy these in kit form. So you get a new timing belt, a new water pump, and you get all the pulleys, and you get the tensioner that keeps that belt tight. So all those high-stress moving parts get changed together, and you're back to square one and ready to go another 105,000 miles or whatever the interval is.
Okay, well, that answers my question. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Frank, thank you. And this one came in via email, Gordon, from Brendan. My inspection is coming up. My left passenger side window won't roll up or down when pressing the switches, but it does freely move up and down. Will that fail the inspection? I live in New York.
Yeah, no, there's no, there's nothing on there about the operation of the windows,
yeah,
side windows. And I even think that if the window was not even in the car, I don't think that's an issue at all.
Huh.
You need a windshield, of course.
That would be nice.
But I don't ever remember anything about side windows working or even being present.
Very interesting.
Yeah, good question.
We have that problem sometimes in the minivan that we own, the Lemon Deluxe. Every now and then, for a month or two, the passenger side won't work, and then it'll start working again.
Just like that.
Oh, it's a piece of junk. I could do a whole show on that, but let's not. Chris in Saratoga. Chris, you're on.
Yeah, the woman that had the glare on the dashboard, my wife had a similar problem a few years ago, and I simply went to J.C. Whitney catalog
ordered her a dashboard cover, which was a really short nap, like carpeted type material. Totally took all the glare away from the windshield after that. It was about $25.
Yeah. Perfect.
Yeah, great idea.
Hey, Chris, thank you.
Thank you.
Bye now. 800-348-2551 is the number. Gordon Fricke is our guest on a Vox Pop, an automotive Vox Pop on a nice day for driving. Pat in LaGrangeville. Pat.
Hey, yeah, I got a 2002 Ford minivan, Windstar Limited, and sometimes I'm doing hair over 70. It only happens on occasion. The transmission, check transmission light comes on, and it flashes. So, it flashes, and then there's a little computer thing that says check transmission. I look at the fluid; it's not burnt. It's nice. It's pink. It only happens once in a while. It hasn't happened in a few weeks, but sometimes it'll happen 2 days in a row, and then as soon as I turn the car off and start it again, it generally doesn't happen.
Sure. Do you notice any change in how the car operates when the light comes on?
Actually, let me just correct it. It's the overdrive light that flashes. So yeah. Anyway, but no, I don't notice anything, and I don't touch the overdrive button or anything. I'm driving basically on the Taconic Parkway.
So you're at 70 miles an hour, and that's when the overdrive should be on, right?
Yeah. Steady cruise.
It is, and it doesn't change. It just shifts normally up and down these little hills here, and even if the cruise control is on.
Sure. The overdrive light on your vehicle is the transmission's version of the check engine light. So when that overdrive light is flashing, it's sensing some kind of a problem, it thinks. And that's why it flashes to alert you. And the vehicle is old enough to where when you shut it off and restart it, it kind of starts from scratch. But there will be a code in the computer's history as to why the light came on. So what you could do is at the very least get it scanned, get a shop to read the codes, and just find out why that's coming on. And it could be for a number of reasons. And the codes aren't going to necessarily tell what the trouble is. It's just going to put the shop in the direction of trouble. If you're feeling no symptoms or any problems driving, you could just not do anything, and it may not ever turn into a problem.
Do these vehicles have any history of transmission issues?
Not terrible. Yours is you said it was an Aerostar or a Windstar?
Windstar.
A Windstar. I don't think they had terrible transmission issues. I don't remember seeing lots of them failing.
But you said this might not be a transmission issue at all.
No, it probably is because it's flashing the overdrive light. Yeah. So it's definitely a transmission-related code. Might be a good idea to get it scanned, and you don't have to do anything after that if you don't choose to. But the shop might this is the beginning of a potential big problem, give you a heads up as to what could be happening.
And what do you think could be happening? If at 70 miles an hour on the Taconic, suddenly that overdrive light is blinking.
It could be sensing. There is a common code that senses the difference in the speed of the input of the transmission to the output. And when you're in overdrive, there should be no difference in speed. So if the computer senses that the input of the transmission is going faster than the output, it's registering a slip. So it might say that slip detected in high overdrive.
Okay, and so what does that tell you?
That could be the beginning of trouble because your lockup torque converter is starting to slip.
And that means what? It has teeth and it
loses? No, it's a clutch type mechanism.
Okay, and so that's an expensive repair?
Oh yeah, that could be big trouble.
And on a 2002 Windstar, it would be bye-bye Windstar,
I
right?
I think it could be by curtains.
All right. Yeah. Bill in Menands. Bill, you're on with Gordon Fricke.
How are you? I have a story and a question. I have a 63 Comet.
Yeah.
And just when you're talking about he or she's, I used to refer to the car as my baby until a friend came over one day to look at the car and my daughter was here. And my friend said, "Where's the car?" I said, "Oh, my baby's in the garage." And my daughter interrupts me, says, "Excuse me, that is a car."
That's what I call my daughters.
Yeah,
I refer to them as baby periodically, so I understand totally.
I no longer refer to my car as my baby.
Yeah. My daughter, the car. That was a show, wasn't it?
Yes. Anyway, so I need to have an exhaust manifold gasket put into the vehicle. And I was wondering how complicated it is, and shouldn't be, you know, more than a half an hour of work. Or
is this a six-cylinder or a V8?
A six-cylinder.
Okay, yeah, nice, straight, one manifold only.
Yeah.
When everything goes right, that's not a bad job on that car, because the engine is very out in the open, very easy to get to. The only fear you have, or we run into, particularly when you're talking about exhaust nuts, bolts, and studs, is rust. Having been in there so long that the nut or the stud won't loosen up and you break it. You don't want to do that.
So how do you avoid that?
Our best friend with older cars and rusty nuts and bolts is the torch.
Yeah, I have brand new bolts to put in.
Yeah,
and everything. But one of the things that happened, and the reason why I don't bring back the other guy, when he did the work, he broke off the top of the bolt hole.
That's the fear.
And I had to get it re-soldered.
Yeah, that's the fear, that one of the studs or nuts will break off in your attempt to loosen it. And
that's what I'm saying. That's why I'm taking it to somebody else. But I just didn't want to tell me, give me a song and dance to help tell me how complicated it was.
No, it's not a complicated job. It's actually a refreshing type of a job compared to the way new cars are put together and housed. So, no, he'll be fine if you're taking it to a professional who has torches, which
yes,
I'm sure he does.
Someone, and I just want to make sure that you know, they're not going to, you know, give me the song and dance how, you know. I'll ask him for an estimate before he does the work, but I'm envisioning, you know, just having the proper tools is the key to the issue.
Yeah, the amount of time I couldn't guess, but it's not a terrible job.
Okay. Well, so thanks a lot.
Well, good luck with the 63 Comet, Bill. Thanks for calling.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
So a torch is just a torch, right? It's an acetylene torch or something?
It's a concentrated flame, and it heats up the item you're trying to warm up, the nut, for example, on the end of a stud on his exhaust manifold.
You're not melting it.
No, you just want to get it red so it lets go of the threads because they're all rusted together.
Yeah.
And I just took an exhaust pipe off of a vehicle that, you know, the studs and nuts were pretty rusty.
Yeah.
But I said, I'm not breaking any of these. And I made them red hot, and all of them came out fine.
See, what do you wear, oven mitts when you do the job?
Well, you want to have some glasses on because the torch is quite bright, and some gloves on, but that's about it.
Wow, that's pretty exciting. And so you didn't break any?
I did not want to break any, and I got them red hot, and I didn't break them.
Good for you. Let's go to Henry in Shutesbury. Henry, you're on.
Hello there.
Hello.
I have a Passat 2000. It was inspected. 2 days after the inspection, the check engine light comes on. Took it to the mechanic. It said check engine and emissions workshop. Mechanic could not make sense of it and told me he's going to research this because he said the software was corrupted. Huh. Either the computer told him that or he surmised this.
Yeah.
Any thoughts on this, and should I keep driving it?
Yeah, well, here's the thing with codes. There are generic codes that any scanner can read, and the government has kind of split them up into, if it's an emission code, they want to make it so it's easy to, not easy, but it's diagnosable by most everybody, not just taking it to the dealership. But there are also manufacturer specific codes that if he doesn't have the right software in his scan tool, he can only read the code number, but it won't tell him anything about it. Or it might just say manufacturer code, no information available. So you can research the code in your database or on the internet or with a scan tool that has the right software. So I would not be worried about it. But it'd be nice to get to the bottom of it.
Now, I don't know what the rules are in Massachusetts, but if your check engine light is on in New York and you have to have it inspected, you can't pass inspection.
Correct.
But if this is something that's not emissions related, why couldn't you pass in that case?
Well, the idea is that if the check engine light is called on, whatever caused it could potentially cause an emissions problem. So that's even though some strange codes come on that you would never associate with an emissions problem, somehow the government,
and its infinite wisdom,
thinks that it could be a problem, and that's why it turns the light on.
I see.
Luckily for you, it came on after the inspection, so at least you're okay. Yeah.
I almost thought it was the inspection's fault.
Nah, I'm with you, Henry. Conspiracy.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, nah, I'm sure it's just a coincidence. These lights can come on at any time.
So take it to, basically, you take it to a dealer in this case.
Well, no, just maybe a shop that's got more elaborate equipment that's got software for that car.
It's a Volkswagen?
Yeah. It's a Volkswagen. Yeah. So it's European software package, and most scanners takes care of it.
There you go.
All right. Well, thank you.
Henry, thanks a lot for the call. All right, let's get another one in before the next break. 800-348-2551 is the number. Mike in Latham. Mike, you're on.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good.
I love that check engine light thing. So I'm working on a 2008 Santa Fe. It's got a V6, four-wheel drive, and it's got a check engine light on for a misfire in cylinder 3. So I changed the coil in cylinder 3. I changed the plugs on that side. Because to get the plugs out on that Santa Fe, you actually have to take off that air plenum, that upper intake thing.
Yeah.
So I put a new coil on that, and then I just changed the plugs. And the plugs didn't actually look bad. And the truck definitely runs rough when that misfire is happening. I put it all back together, and I still have a misfire on cylinder 3. So
yeah.
I'm wondering what your thoughts are.
Yeah, it's not uncommon. A misfiring cylinder can be caused by pretty much three different things. A spark issue, which you attempted to address, a fuel issue, or a compression issue.
Oh, that's probably the worst.
Okay.
It is the worst, Ray.
Right.
It's wise in a case like this to do a compression test to make sure you don't have a bad cylinder. Because if you do, now you got engine mechanical issues potentially, or sticking valves or something like that. The other thing could be a partially plugged fuel injector causing it, or carbon buildup on the intake valve and or the fuel injector. And that can become,
okay.
That can be solved a couple of ways. One is by an additive in the gas tank, Tecron, which we talk about all the time. There's also some sprays that go in the intake to loosen up and clean the valves. But if you have the ability and the tools, it's nice to know before you do everything else that the compression is good. And if the compression is good and strong, do everything else, and then it's solvable. But if it's a bad compression, a bad cylinder, now you got bigger issues.
Michael, thank you very much for the call. We appreciate it. Our number here is 800-348-2551. Gordon Fricke is our guest, and we'll be right back.
Support comes from the Henyon Bakery, Amherst. Since 1993, offering hearth-baked whole grain breads, pastries, birthday, wedding, and special occasion cakes, as well as gluten-free offerings. HenyonBakery.com. Kingsway Community Schenectady, New York, offering a continuum of care and services to area seniors since 1975, including memory care and more. Caring in the family tradition. 518-393-8800. Boyden & Perrin, Amherst, Massachusetts, providing foreign and domestic car, truck, and SUV repair services in a Massachusetts inspection station for over 50 years. BoydenandPerrin.com. Mango Tree Imports, a global fair trade shop in downtown Saratoga Springs, New York, featuring artisan goods from more than 60 countries. MangoTreeImports.com and on Facebook. And Poughkeepsie Farm Project 9th Annual Super Bowl, a celebration of local soups, music, and community on Sunday, October 16th. FarmProject.org.
Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here along with Gordon Fricke, who is our automotive expert, and our number is 800-348-2551. You can also email the program if you're listening online, for instance, voxpop@wamc.org. Say if you're listening in Germany.
Oh, you think we have listeners that far away?
You never know.
Well, I think my daughter could be via the internet listening.
You're kidding me.
At least I alerted her to it.
Oh, this is great.
She's doing a semester in Freiburg, Germany.
And she speaks the language pretty well?
Well, she's learning.
And you speak, right?
I do. Yeah,
all right, let's hear it.
Say, Hannah, kannst du mir hören? If du mir hören kannst, dann bitte anrufen unsere Radiostation.
Okay, well, that's something about the radio station.
There you go. You got it.
I got to tell you, people often say German an ugly language. I think it's a fabulous language. I like it. I like to listen to it.
She said it's very difficult to learn, which it is. Yeah.
I bought a, many years ago now, 10 years ago, 12, 15, one of those 12 discs Baron sets. And I said, you know, I'm going to drive in the car and learn German.
You mean like Rosetta Stone, that type of stuff?
Back in the day, you bought all these CDs. And I'm still on disc one because I only listen in the 5 to 15 minutes I'm in the car.
Let me ask you a question, see if you can translate it.
Okay.
How much are the matches?
I could say it earlier.
Or just say matches. You just had it in the car.
Streichhütze.
There you go.
Streichhütze. You see, there we are. So let's go back to the phones now that we've had our German lesson. And Joyce in South Fallsburg. Joyce, you're on.
Yes. Hello. I have a 2010 Elantra Touring Wagon. And I just had the timing belt changed, but the mechanic did not suggest to change the water pump. He said that the water pump is in a different compartment, and so I'm reading all about changing water pumps. Should I have it done?
Well,
anyway,
he is correct. Not all timing belts drive the water pumps. And on Hyundais, yours in particular, being a four-cylinder engine, they are not in the same area. So, no, you don't arbitrarily need to change the pump in that case. So he did fine by you, and you may not need a water pump for a long time, maybe never. So I wouldn't worry about it.
Oh, great. Very good. The car is great. I just got it. And I really love tootling around in my touring wagon, Hyundai touring wagon.
Oh, that's great.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Joyce. Boy, what a relaxed show today.
Yeah, that was very good. Oh, and by the way, my daughter just texted me. She is listening, and she's hearing us.
Good.
She's about, 6,000 miles away.
That's pretty great. Yeah. She must be having a boring time over there.
Well, it's 8 o'clock at night, 8:44, so it's evening for her.
She should be having a beer.
Yeah, well, maybe.
Let's go to Alan in Great Barrington. Not the Alan in Great Barrington, is it?
Yes, of course. Alan Shartok.
Hey, you don't sound the same, man. You're on.
A different one. There's two of us. I'm taller. So I have a 2002 Volvo V70 Cross Country. The car was running fine. It was driving on the road. It started sputtering and running rough, but continued like that for a few miles. I turned around in a parking lot. It stalled. I started it, and it stalled again, and then it hasn't started since. There's no codes that come up when you scan it, and already changed the fuel pump. Someone said a fuel pump could go and not shoot a code, and the other thought they had was either a computer or a wire to the computer, and they said nothing else would cause it to die while running and not throw a code. Is that correct?
Yeah. Unfortunately, there are a lot of circumstances that won't leave any trace or codes to search where the problem might be. Loss of fuel like that is very likely. What I like to do, and your shop probably did this, but before if I'm suspicious of a fuel pump, let's say we test it, there's no fuel pressure.
We changed that.
Yes, but prior to actually changing it, and your guys may have done this, but you need to make sure that the pump is being signaled to come on when you're cranking the engine to be sure
it has pressure, normal pressure at the fuel rail.
So you've got good fuel pressure. Okay. Well, what are you lacking? Spark? Did they check for spark?
Yeah. So there's no spark, but it's, there's five individual coils on that, so they couldn't have all gone bad at once.
No. Did they by any chance just confirm that the timing belt didn't break?
Yeah, that was checked. The timing belt was replaced about a year ago. So,
but it's currently okay?
Yeah, the timing belt's fine. The timing's not off.
Yeah. Well, then there could be an electronic reason why it lost its spark, and it happened so quickly that the computer didn't pick it up. Huh. And that takes you into things like crank position sensor, you know, various wiring issues, which is not very likely on that car, but it's going to take some good old-fashioned diagnostic skills and time to see where the problem is. So I've run into a lot of cars like that, and it, you know, sometimes it is the fuel pump, sometimes it's the connections at the pump, but you've got good pressure. So now you need to scan it and check for a crankshaft signal that the computer knows that the engine is physically turning. You need to make mm-hmm. sure that the camshaft is really turning, which is the timing belt. There's a lot of stuff that needs to be confirmed, even though you might be relatively sure it's okay. You got to go back and start at square one.
Okay.
And the starter motor had been replaced the day before. Could that have anything to do with it?
It's not likely, because it's still crank strong and all that.
Yeah, the starter motor's fine. It turns over.
Does it turn over seemingly faster than normal? Or is it the normal sound when you crank it?
No, it's the normal sound. Yeah, I know what you're asking. Does it have compression?
Yeah,
and all
exactly.
That? It does.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, okay, I'm not an automotive expert. It's quite clear if you listen to this program, I know nothing about this, but the timing of it all, if you replace the starter and then it doesn't start, but the starter's okay, doesn't the replacement process, isn't that the key to this whole thing?
Well, he got the starter 2 days ago, and this car quit while running.
Oh.
So I doubt the starter.
Yeah, we were driving it. It was down in Connecticut near quit on the airport. So we traveled, you know, more than 100 miles since the starter was installed. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, good luck with that. You know, an 02 Volvo, that's a baby, right?
Yeah, I mean, they're great cars that last a long time, so it's worth solving.
And drive that thing to the moon. Let's go to Alan in Colony. Alan, you're on.
Hi. I have a 2005 Buick LaCrosse, and I just last Monday I put it into the shop, and the traction control light was on. And also the ABS light was on, and I put it in for other work as well. But looking at the bill, just the lights were $400. And of course, they charged me for putting it on the computer and all that, and that was included. But yeah, I drove 5 miles, and the lights came back on again.
Ouch.
And, you know, I'm trying to resolve if I want to go back there and just have another problem with the shop.
Well, knowing specifically what they fixed to solve the ABS and traction light,
they had something about a harness there.
Yeah, probably one of the harnesses that goes out to your front wheels.
Mm-hmm.
It was not uncommon.
A wire harness?
Yeah, the wires that connect the ABS sensor to the car had trouble with some of those GM cars of that era. No, definitely bring it back. I know it's you hate to go back and for fear that they're going to say it's something else or whatever, but, you know, we're all human, and they may not have gotten it right, or they got it right and there's something else going on there. If you know them and you trust them, just mention it and say, hey, look, could you give this car a look? You know, the light's back on. I'm not sure, you know, what's going on. They're going to ask you to bring it back, of course.
Well, most work is warranted.
Absolutely,
though, right?
Yeah. You can't consider anything, you know, faulty or guilty till you go check it. So you got to get it back there and let them look at it.
All right, Alan, thank you for the call. Over to Chris in Albany. Chris.
Yeah, hi.
Well, can you turn your radio down a little bit, Chris? Yeah, that would be good. Much as I enjoy hearing my own voice. Oh, he's gone. No, I didn't mean to hang up, Chris. Whoops, I apologize, old boy. Let's go to Charles in Orange Lake. Charles, you're on.
How you doing?
Good.
I've got a problem. I took my battery out of my truck. It's a 99 Navigator. And I do diligence. I clean the battery terminals and so on and so forth, not having a problem with the battery, check the water level and everything. put it back in and hooked it all back up and everything. And now every time that I start the car, I get one wipe of the windshield wiper, and all of my gauges go all the way over to the right and back again.
Oh, seen that.
And this is after it's, you've started it and it's running.
It's as I actually turn the key to start it.
During the cranking.
Yes.
Okay.
A little voltage spike.
Yeah, I mean, you need to check. Just be sure your connections and your terminals are all perfectly on, good and tight. And at this point, disconnect the battery again, check your connections,
okay,
and then reconnect it. And that will maybe reboot everything, and your problem might be gone after this second attempt.
But, I've had this issue at times, not with the windshield wiper, but the tachometer and everything will spike up. And it turned out the battery was bad. I ended up replacing the battery.
It's a voltage issue that he's experiencing, whether it's a bad connection or an arcing somewhere. How old is the battery?
Charles?
I don't remember. I really don't remember. I know it's not the original battery.
Yeah.
So I'm going to say that the battery is probably beyond its life.
Expectancy. Yeah, what caused you to remove it and clean it? Were you having trouble cranking it? Were you having some times where you had to jump start it?
No, just due diligence, and there was a bit of fuzz going around the terminals, and I took the battery out, and I wanted to look inside and see how the level was on the fluids.
You could take that battery. You could take that battery and get it tested. You could get it tested car and all, or take the battery out and take it to a shop or somewhere. It could be that the battery is getting tired.
All right, Charles, thank you very much for that. And let's see, Pat in LaGrangeville. Pat.
Hey, quick question again on the 2002 Windstar we got hung up on. Anyway, both the passenger side windows, the main window on the passenger side and the little quarter window in the back, they both don't work, and none of the fuses seem to be blown. What is the likelihood that both of those motors are shot? I got the vehicle from a family member. They don't remember. They didn't use the windows much. They were more air conditioning kind of people. But what is the connection between those two windows? That the back quarter window on the passenger side is only controllable from the front driver's side.
Yep. It's very possible that where the wires leave the door and go into the body of the car, when you open up the door, the wires have to make it inside the car. There's a harness there that's all nicely bundled up, with some kind of a casing. And from the thousands of opening and shut cycles of the door, those wires tend to get broken inside there. If you were to open that up, I got a feeling you're going to find one or two severed wires in there, and that's probably the cause of it.
Okay. Yeah, it's unlikely, but both of those would go, right?
No, I doubt it. Yeah.
All right, Pat, thank you so much for that one. Let's go over quickly to Cliff in Kingston. Cliff, you got about a minute or so here.
Yeah, I figured that. I got one of the problems I have in my car, it's a 95 Camry, is on occasion, it's like the car has a tendency to stumble. It doesn't stall out, but sounds like it's coming. It comes close to stalling out, and I'm trying to figure out what could be causing it. And I seem to be coming down to the flex pipe cat.
No, I doubt that's what it is, because that's just getting your exhaust out. Is it doing this at a stoplight when you're at a stop?
Occasionally.
Or does it happen on the road driving?
Happened a couple of times at a stoplight or when I'm pulling out of my parking spot, but I've had this car for about 4 years now, and it's already got 244,000 plus miles.
Wow, yeah, plugs.
Well, it could be a lot of things. I think I would get it checked to see. It could be the most basic, like Ray was saying. It could just have completely tired and worn out spark plugs. In the olden days, we called it a tune-up. There might be some other things.
Yeah, I know. I'd call it a tune-up, too, because I just recently had the oil changed.
Yeah, I think I'd be interested in seeing what the spark plugs looked like, the air filter.
Yeah.
Get some Tekron in the tank.
The air filter's good. I even got a spare air filter for that.
Nice.
Yeah, well, yeah. I tell you, I had the same, thanks, Cliff. I had the same issue with a car I had for a long time. Stop at the stoplight in rain, it was especially bad. Turned out it was plugs.
Yeah, plugs,
like a kitten
wires if it's old enough to have them.
Yeah. All right, this is, we'll take care of a couple of quick emails here. One is from Evan, who asks, is there a way to check for leaks in the EVAP system without a smoke machine?
It's kind of difficult because the smoke machine brings it out, obviously, by the little whiff of smoke coming through the crack or the leak or the rusty pipe. Visual is really the only other alternative, and that's to carefully go from one end of it to the other with a flashlight and look for any cracks in the vacuum hoses, splits, rust in the lines if they turn to metal, and every single connection. And you might stumble onto it. It's very possible.
All right, quickly here. This is from Robert in the town of Wright. Are you a proponent of changing the fluid at a specific, brake fluid that is, at a specific interval or when needed? And does modern technology in the fluid make a difference? Danke schön, says Robert.
Yeah, yeah, he heard us earlier.
Yeah.
Brake fluid takes on moisture. It's hygroscopic.
Yeah.
So, yes, most car manufacturers recommend getting it changed every 2 years. So, yes.
Gordon Fricke, enjoy that ride in that Riviera on the way home. I'm envying you right now.
You want to go with me? Back on a bus.
I got to get the podcast. Support comes from Bodywork Professionals, licensed massage therapist Nick Vivaldi, advanced structural integration practitioner, proprietor, offices in Latham and Saratoga Springs. Open 7 days, your massage and bodywork experts, bodyworkprofessionals.com. The Department of Theater Arts at SUNY New Paltz, presenting Mad Forest, a drama of life during the Romanian Revolution, September 29th through October 16th, newpaltz.edu/theater. NBT Bank, offering trust and fiduciary services, investment management, and retirement planning for individuals and businesses, nbtbank.com. And Union Gables Mansion Inn, Saratoga Springs, providing hotel amenities, a historic bed and breakfast setting with a heated pool, wraparound porches, and private balconies, uniongables.com. Thanks again to the great Gordon Fricke for being here. Thanks to Zach Malloy for engineering the program. Deb Malik took your calls. I'm Ray Graff. Well, the week once again has flown by. Tomorrow, it's Food Friday time. We'll talk cookies.